Good afternoon. I'll call the Wednesday, not so fast. I'll call the Wednesday, February 25th meeting of the Senate Committee on Commerce and Workforce Development to order. Colleagues, we have a very full agenda, so thanks so much for being on time. First, I will open a work session on Senate Bill 462. Colleagues, you will remember we carried this bill over from our Monday meeting, and we actually have adopted an amendment which is in front of you. Jeremy, would you please just refresh our memories about what this bill and the amendment are?
Senate Bill 462 creates an alternative base year which comprises the last four completed calendar quarters preceding the benefit year for purposes of determining eligibility for unemployment insurance benefits.
Madam Chair.
Yes. Senator Pozanski.
I move Senate Bill 462 as amended by the Dash 1 amendments to be reported out with a due pass recommendation and request that the bill be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means.
Senator Pozanski has moved Senate Bill 462 as amended be reported out with a due pass recommendation and requests that it be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means. Members, is there any discussion on the motion? Yes, Senator Telfer.
You know, I've thought about this long and hard as an employer and realizing that in the long run we may be establishing a higher tax rate for employers because of the more current quarter that we're looking back. But as I look at it as to the immediate benefit to employers, it has to outweigh the long-term disadvantage, perhaps, or increase in tax rate, because I think now is not the time to be increasing rates too dramatically on employers who are struggling in this economic environment. And in addition to that, after 8-10 years, when this money is gone, who knows where we're going to be? It is still very, very unclear as to what the rate might be. So I think I was leaning against this bill just a day ago, and I think I'm feeling much more comfortable with supporting the bill today. So.
Thank you, Senator Telfer. Other comments? Yes, Senator George.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'll be voting no on the bill today. Basically, my concern is that I can't figure out exactly what the long-term economic outlook is, and any burden, additional burden to the unemployment, to the system, concerns me. Even though we're going to get some federal funds to cover this, we do know at some point those dollars are going to run out. And so at this time, based off the fact is I really can't look into the future. And what I do know is every time we think we have plenty of money in this building, so far we haven't. And it's been worse every single time that we thought it was going to be. So since I don't know the draw that we're going to see on the unemployment insurance situation, I do not know exactly what the impact is going to be. I'll be voting no. But thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Senator Pozanski.
Madam Chair, I made the motion because I agree with Senator Telfer. We're looking at what the situation is today, and I beg to differ with Senator George just because we don't know what's going to be in the future. And so far out, I mean, the reality, we don't have that crystal ball, and we won't know. But what we do know is that at this point, as we've heard, it really does give some cushion and some assurance to employers right now, and also actually for those individuals who need to have relief, who have been unemployed, opportunity to be able to maintain some type of payments to take care of their daily needs in this short-term immediacy. $90 million is a lot of money, and I expect that we're going to see that being able to be played out for at least a 4 to 6 year period. And then at that point, it's just true. I mean, we may actually go into much worse, or it may spring back, and hopefully sooner than later, just because if we do that, we'll probably not see the impact on businesses that could drive the rates back up. But it seems to me the immediacy of the actions that we take today will benefit many Oregonians. If I remember correctly from the testimony, we're looking at potentially 6,000 individuals that may qualify that currently don't. And I know, at least in my district and many of the areas, they are in need of assistance, and they're very proud, but at this point they just can't find work.
Thank you, Senator Montes Anderson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I really feel businesses are hurting right now, and this will actually make their rates be less than what they would have been. I really feel that this is helping them now, and now in a times of economics is not the time to have their rates go sky high, and so I will be a yes.
Thank you, Senator Montes Anderson. And did you have an additional
I just wanted to point out that we've got the new fiscal impact based on the Dash 1 amendment, and that the explanation with this bill is 8 to 10 years of money, of time to utilize this $90 million. It should stretch about 8 to 10 years.
And thank you for that clarification. Members, the fiscal impact was delivered to your offices. It's also stapled to the staff measure summary, so you have it in front of you. And I would like to just comment that I think this is really a significant bill that we're passing, even though we're sending it to Ways and Means. I want to thank the department for doing some incredibly hard number crunching to try to make sure that the implementation of this bill is as efficient as possible. And just to say that I think I agree with the comments of some of my colleagues who have said this really is a win-win bill, that not only are we, by doing this, making Oregon eligible for $85 million into our trust fund and $5 million for administration, which will ensure that rates for employers at least don't go up as rapidly as they otherwise would have. But we're also making somewhere between 6,000 and 7,000 unemployed workers a year eligible for these benefits, and that's money that will help them support their families and also flow into our local communities. So it's hard to imagine very many bills that we could do this session that would do more good in the short and long term. So I am very, very pleased and want to thank the committee members for all the hard work that has gone into this over the last three hearings. So with nothing further to come before us, we are on a motion that the bill be reported out with a due pass recommendation as amended and with a request that the bill be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means. Pam, would you please call the roll?
Senator George.
No.
Senator Babcock?
Aye.
Senator
Montes? Aye.
Vice Chair Telford?
Aye.
Senator
Wilson? Aye. Motion carries. Bill is passed out with a due pass recommendation and a request that it be referred to Ways and Means. I'll close the work session on Senate Bill 462. And I'll open a public hearing on House Bill 2420. And I see that we have quite a sign-up list of people who want to testify, and we also have at least two legislators who wish to go first. So I'll call Senator Devlin, and is Representative Matthews? Yes. Representative Matthews and Senator Devlin, if you would please come forward. And Jeremy, if you'd introduce us to House Bill 2420.
House Bill 2420 relates to firefighters and cancer. The measure adds 12 types of cancer to the existing firefighter presumption for employment-caused occupational diseases under the workers' compensation system. It applies the presumption to non-volunteer firefighters who have completed at least 5 years of employment and are first diagnosed by a physician after July 1, 2009. It establishes that presumption cannot be applied to claims filed more than 7 years following the termination of employment as a non-volunteer firefighter, allows that the presumption may be rebutted by clear and convincing evidence that the cancer was not caused or contributed to in material part by the firefighter's employment, or that tobacco use was the major contributing cause of the cancer. It states that presumption cannot be applied to prostate cancer first diagnosed after the firefighter reaches the age of 55, requires that the presumption also be applied to by cities that provide a separate disability and retirement system for firefighters.
Thank you, Jeremy. And Representative Matthews, I think perhaps you'd like to go first and introduce us to this bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Greg Matthews. I am the state representative for House District 50, which is Gresham. I'm also a firefighter and extremely honored to be here before your committee today to present House Bill 2420. As you may know, I had the distinct privilege of carrying this bill to the floor on behalf of our committee. It passed with near unanimous consent out of the Business and Labor Committee. In fact, the one vote that was a nay on the floor of the day of the vote actually had changed his vote. So we left the floor with a 55-1 vote, which I'm extremely proud of, and I think it's an example of the fine work that's been done in this process. I'd like to touch on a couple of points. As I mentioned, I'm a past police officer but a current firefighter. For the past 12 years, I've worked for Gresham Fire and Emergency Services, currently a fire lieutenant. And when people say, how's the transition going to state legislator, I always say, well, you know, it's great, except when you're a firefighter, they issue your protective equipment. It's different. But the reality is that while we do offer protective equipment, you know, there's times when it's not enough. And I do want to mention that the protective equipment itself, you know, the helmet, the heavy turnouts, the breathing apparatus, self-contained breathing apparatus, heavy gloves, it's not enough when you're looking at the dangerous toxins that are on scene. As you're going to hear in testimony from a lot of the folks, including stakeholders and several firefighters from our various districts, there's asbestos, benzene, carbon monoxide, formaldehyde, vinyl chloride. 70,000 chemicals make up well over 70 million combinations as they burn together and become products of combustion. It's the dangerous thing about that is these aren't like suits. You know, if you think back to the days before we passed the public smoking ban, you don't just simply take turnouts, drop them off at the cleaners, and pick them up later. It's extremely dangerous to get these chemicals out of your clothes. They sit in your turnout rooms. They sit in the apparatus. You can't get away from it. And despite showering over and over, you often go home on your days off with that, you know, with the smell of that smoke and also the chemicals in your skin. For many of you that were here last session, and I'm new to this process but not new to this problem, you know, you've heard cancer presumption before, but I want to be very clear that this is a different bill and that this time it's been drafted with a very combined effort of stakeholders. I think it's a very responsible bill. It addresses the many needs of all involved. And what I mean by that is that, you know, they've got built into it a definite start date and also a tail, and you'll hear more about that, but it gives predictability and cost containment issues. And when I talk about cost containment, you know, you may hear opposition that states, you know, that this is going to cost quite a bit in terms of, you know, what it might do to workers' comp. It's my opinion, humble opinion. In fact, you know, I think for the record, it's been shown that these are exaggerated greatly. And firefighters make up less than 1% of the working class in the workers' comp. And John Schultz, who I think you all have come to appreciate his great work, had indicated that when questioned during our panel, since 1991, have employers enjoyed any savings at all in workers' comp? And the answer to that was produced a couple days later was, yes, they had, and it was to the tune of $16.4 billion. Quite honestly, you know, firefighting there are inherent dangers to being a firefighter, and nobody's going to apologize for that. We all know what we're getting into when it comes to that. But beyond that, you know, it shouldn't be part of the job to have these life-threatening illnesses. And the scientific studies show that, you know, these 12 are the 12 cancers are outlined. There's scientific data that supports that. And beyond that is the fact that, you know, you can say it's part of the job, the inherent risk. We deal with a lot of trauma, a lot of tragedy. But in the end of the day, you know, you should be able to go home safely to your family after you protected everybody else's. And quite honestly, with cancer lingering over your head, with no ability to track where and when you ended up getting cancer, it's time to put the onus on our employers, the same employers that are out there recruiting the very young explorers and the community college students, the job fairs, you know, attracting the youth with, you know, in my opinion, it's unconscionable not to offer this as a workers' comp provided insurance plan when there's the scientific data that shows it and also the inherent risks are there. So I guess what I really want to focus on is the process this has gone through, the interim of the stakeholders' meetings, I think the Oregon State Firefighter Council, Special District Association, as you perhaps will enjoy the same scene I did when Bob Livingston and Hasina Squires were testifying side by side. I'm told that's very rare in this building. It was pretty amazing that they had come to terms on something that was so important. And it's important to recognize the reason they did is because it was so important. It's a problem that's been identified that they both had a stake and a very interest in finding a solution. They're presenting that solution today, and they don't stand alone in that. They've got, of course, the special districts and the Oregon Fire Chiefs Association, the Oregon Fire District Association, the Oregon Volunteer Firefighters, Oregon State Firefighter Council, and the City of Portland. And let's not forget also, this went through the MLAC as well and came out of there with unanimous consent. So, again, I'm very proud to sit here as a firefighter, but also as a legislator, having, you know, passed this through the House at 55-1. And I sit before this committee and ask that you please take this into consideration, hear the great testimony today, and understand that it's my belief we are in the greatest profession in the world, and firefighters do an incredible job for their communities, and I'm simply asking that you consider making this Oregon one of the 30 states that will provide this coverage to our firefighters. And again, thank you for your opportunity, the opportunity for me to testify today. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Matthews, for your comments. I think we'll hold questions till we've heard from this panel, and I do see the chair of the House Business and Labor Committee in the audience, so if you'd like to come forward and be part of this panel, that would be great as well. And Senator Devlin, welcome to the Senate Committee on Commerce and Workforce Development.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. I am very glad to be here today before you, and actually be very glad to be here with the two representatives to my left. I would say in particular that I believe that Representative Matthews is probably more qualified than anyone else in the legislature to talk about the importance of this bill. I'm here to just lend my support to the bill. I think it does some very important things. The firefighters of Oregon risk their lives on a daily basis. They actually also risk their health on a daily basis. We all know that during the course of their employment, they are exposed to toxic substances. We know from studies that they have more exposure than average citizens. We know that that exposure can lead, and in many cases does lead, to various types of cancer. This bill recognizes the serious risks that they face. It recognizes our obligation to them for taking these risks, both to their life and to their health. It provides for them should they develop cancer. I would tell you that it provides at least some degree of solace, some degree of belief that they will be cared for. But I can tell you quite honestly, all of us having probably known one or two or three people that have developed cancer in their lives and people that have died from cancer, it is not a time when it is easy to find solace in your life. And this is not only a challenge to the firefighter that's been impacted, it's a challenge to their family. And it's not the time that people should be debating about whether or not this was caused by some other factor, given the exposures that we know firefighters face. It's been stated that a similar bill passed in the Senate. Was a very divisive bill in the Senate, passed by a fairly good margin, but passed. But a lot of work has been done on this bill since this time, and I think this is a much different bill. Stakeholders have worked very hard on this bill. They've worked to not only address the issues that firefighters brought forward, but they've worked to address the issues that employers have brought forward, and I think that they have come up with a very reasonable solution. Given the fact that firefighters on a daily basis put at risk their lives and their health, I think this is the least that we could do given these circumstances, and I hope for your passage and recommendation to the Senate to pass this bill.
Thank you, Senator Devlin, and I know that you're on a tight time frame, so if you need to leave, please feel free to do so. Thank you for your comments. And the inimitable Representative Mike Stoffler, Chair of the House Committee on Business and Labor, welcome to the Senate Committee on Commerce and Workforce Development.
Thank you, Madam Chair. It's a pleasure to be here. Mike Stoffler, State Representative, House District 48, Happy Valley, Outer Southeast Portland. And yes, Chair of the House Committee on Business and Labor, where I serve with my friend here honorably. This bill, there's several things here, and I'll try to be brief. I'm going to steal some of Tom Chamberlain's testimony who's another firefighter, by the way, who we all know and love. And I think since the early 90s, we've been trying, the legislature's been had this before them, and finally I think we have a great chance of passing it, making it the law. I also want to point out my friend Bill Humbert back here, who's a firefighter who is suffering from cancer and will not be able to take advantage of this. Unless I want to remind us that people, the firefighters who have contracted cancer for whatever reason, will at this point will not be able to take advantage of this. Yet he's here in support for it, and he has been for years. I think Representative Thatcher summed it up rather well, to be quite frank with you, in committee when she said, you know what, I don't know if this is something, a bill, I'm paraphrasing here. She goes, this is the best we're going to get. And when she looked at the people that were supporting it, the stakeholders, she voted aye. We had, it was a 9-1 vote in committee, if I remember right. The one that voted no changed his vote on the floor, and all but one House member voted for it. These guys have made it clear, and you're going to hear a lot more testimony about it. My firehouse is right around the corner of mine. Carl Koenig, another firefighter friend of mine, is sitting right behind me. Has staffed that firehouse, and when my family needs them, they're going to be there. And they aren't going to call me up and ask me if I'm a Republican or a Democrat or whether I like taxes or not or anything like that. They're just going to roll out, show up, and do their best for me and my family. And I just think they're worth it. And I look forward to the passage of this bill. And I just want to thank you for allowing us to be here. And if you have any questions before I go back to committee, I'd be happy to try to answer them to the best of my ability. But so thanks for having me.
Thank you very much for your testimony, and those firefighters probably won't even ask you if you're a fine American.
No, well, thank you.
But you are a fine American.
That's very kind of you.
So any questions? Yes, Representative Matthews, go ahead.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, thank you. Yeah, I don't know if it's...
Can you re-identify yourself?
Greg Matthews, yes, House District 50. It might be the allergies or something from the puppy mill days the other day, but but I want to just mention the man to my right, if you'll just indulge me for just a moment about leadership. This gentleman here, Representative Mike Schaffler, has helped, along with several members in the House and Senate as well, to carry this ball 99 yards down the field with our stakeholders that you'll hear from, and this gentleman had every right to carry this bill to the floor and had the class to hand it to me and let me carry it across the goal line. And I just really would be remiss if I didn't say thank you, Representative Schaffler, class act, and I really appreciate that opportunity, and thank you very much.
And you're welcome, Representative, Madam Chair, if I may. It's because he knows a lot more about the subject matter than I do.
Thank you, and thank you both for your testimony. Any questions for the representative, Senator Mona Sanderson?
There are two firefighters that I love, and they're both from my district. One is Greg Matthews, and I'm delighted to have see here and what he does, and Bill Humbert in the back row. And they've lobbied me hard and heavy on this bill, and you both mean a lot to me. Thanks.
Thank you.
Yes, Senator Prezansky.
Madam Chair, I think Representative Matthews probably needs to get a little bit more credit. Not that the good chair doesn't deserve it, but the reality is you got this one going and got it going quick, because we did have something go over to the House, and for whatever reason we weren't able to get it through last time. This bill, with the cooperation of all the individuals that have been involved in the off-season during the interim, have put together, I think, a better bill. And I think with your expertise, as the good chair has said, is one of the reasons why you got the success and the results that you did.
And I got a Madam Chair, if I may chime in. It was absolutely, I have a great committee and a lot of good new people. And having Representative Matthews on this committee was more than helpful. Having an expert who lives it was a great benefit to us, and I just couldn't thank him enough either. So we're going to go get our arms put in splints, because we're broken them by patting one another on the back, unless there's any further questions.
Thank you very much for your testimony, and thank you for kicking off such an important hearing. So next we'll call Bob Livingston and Hasina Squires. Please come forward.
Madam Chair, as we heard, this is one of those unique opportunities. I'm glad we have a photographer here to get this moment for us.
But they're not sitting next to each other.
Oh, we will. So welcome to the Senate Commerce Committee, and we're having your, I believe, Hasina, your testimony passed out right now. And please, whichever of you has decided to go first, please go ahead.
Oh. Good afternoon, Madam Chair and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Bob Livingston, representing the Oregon State Firefighters Council. And while my testimony is on behalf of myself and, more importantly, the Oregon State Firefighters today, I'm also a firefighter here in Salem. Boy, it's really hard to start off, because I think first we started off with Mr. Sarant doing a great job with the introduction, and I think representatives and as well as Senator Devlin did a good job, but I think there's a few points that I'd like to highlight and make sure that we put on the record as we go through this. So I really appreciate the opportunity to be here today. Over the past several decades, numerous studies have been conducted to reinforce what many of us in the fire service have known for years. Firefighters, during the course of their duties, are exposed to many hazards and toxic substances that place them at greater risk of contracting cancer while protecting the lives and properties of others. This issue is also not new to the Oregon legislature, having been discussed in various ways for over a decade. What is different is the spirit of cooperation, additional science, and recognition by many stakeholders that we should work together to draft legislation to address this problem. House Bill 2420 is the product of this cooperative effort. By working together and after nearly a year of discussions, the Special Districts Association of Oregon, the Oregon State Firefighters Council, took the lead in crafting legislation, which was then shared with other stakeholder groups. Today, I'm honored and pleased to report that the Oregon Fire Chiefs Association, Oregon Fire District Directors Association, the City of Portland, and the Oregon Volunteer Firefighters Association all support House Bill 2420. In addition, House Bill 2420 was unanimously supported by the Management Labor Advisory Committee, which reviews and makes recommendations to the Oregon Legislature and the Governor on bills that impacts Oregon workers' compensation system. While House Bill 2420 is certainly historical and enjoys the support of many stakeholders, it is not unique or even trailblazing. In fact, if House Bill 2420 becomes law, Oregon would be roughly the 30th state to provide a legal recognition for certain cancers. Today, I would like to just highlight for you shortly kind of the process that we went through. And as I look back on that process, these are my words, but really, if you try to encapsulate the work that's been done thus far on the bill, we really tried to apply these principles: cost and predictability, fairness and applicability. It was agreed and recognized that cost and predictability were important factors in reaching an agreement on House Bill 2420. That is why House Bill 2420 has a starting date of July 1st, 2009 for the initial diagnosis of a cancer in order to be afforded the presumption. Second, a firefighter will only be afforded the presumption for prostate cancer until the firefighter's 55th birthday. Third, to address the concerns regarding tobacco usage as well as cost and predictability, an employer can rebut the presumption on the basis of clear and convincing evidence that the use of tobacco is the major contributing cause of cancer. Fourth, volunteer firefighters will not be afforded a presumption for those 12 cancers, but will still have the right to file a claim without the benefit of the presumption. Fifth, a firefighter must have at least 5 years of employment before being eligible for the presumption. Sixth, the benefit of the presumption will only last for 84 months following their employment as a firefighter. As you can see, major concessions were made by the Oregon State Firefighters Council, but we recognize the importance of providing employers with predictability and cost-containing measures. Conversely, we appreciate the willingness of the various employer groups to recognize the fairness and applicability of passing legislation to afford a presumption to Oregon's career firefighters. And if I could just highlight some of those fairness and applicability issues. In reviewing the various scientific studies, synergistic effects, healthy worker effects, and other related subject matters, it was agreed that 12 cancers will be recognized for the presumption. This puts Oregon somewhere in the middle to low end of the 30 states as it relates to the number of cancers recognized under a presumption. However, we also recognize that a presumption shifts the burden of proof from the employee to the employer, and that receiving unanimous support from the Management Labor Advisory Committee is significant and shows that this is a good piece of legislation. In addition, House Bill 2420 will also clarify how a certain case may be rebutted if the employer elects to deny the claim, as articulated on page 2, lines 28 through 32. Specifically, the parties to this agreement spent a great deal of time discussing how cases may be rebutted if a claim was to be denied by the employer. In conjunction with the other elements of paragraph 5B, the words in material part will be used to adjudicate denied claims. The parties have specifically chosen the phrase in material part based upon the Court of Appeals of the State of Oregon decision in Mize versus Comcast. And I just would like to just digress here just a little bit. We spent a great deal of time in trying to figure out what that definition of the in material part was, and we both agreed that Mize versus Comcast, as it's on the books right now as an appellate court, is what should be followed if there are cases to be rebutted when this goes forward. We recognize that that case could someday go to the Supreme Court, but at this point in time, we believe that the intent behind this legislation is the snapshot, as we know Mize versus Comcast through the appellate court decision, is what should be applied for that standard regarding the immaterial part. The parties also agreed that all career firefighters who meet the eligibility requirements for this presumption should be covered as a matter of fairness. That is why Section 6 of this bill is necessary in order to assure that this piece of legislation is applied to Portland. And the reason for that is Portland has a separate compensation system. The authority is given to them by you, the legislative body, but they have a separate system. And I need to put on the record now, if I can, Madam Chair, is that we did unfortunately find one minor Scrivener's error in the House Bill 2420, and the dash 5 amendments that I think you have in front of you will correct that error. The error was simply using the word section when it should have used subsection. The dash 5 amendments require Portland to apply subsection 5 of this bill, but not chapter 656 in its entirety to the City of Portland Fire and Police and Disability Retirement Fund.
And Bob, just to interrupt you for a minute, members, you have the dash 5 amendments that were both delivered to your office earlier today, and I think they're stapled to the back of your staff measure summary, so you should have them in front of you. Please go ahead.
And I think, just if I may, too, on that, I think while that was certainly a Scrivener's error and it was just using section rather than subsection, I think this is just another great illustration of where the stakeholders throughout this process have continued to have dialogue. And in my workings with Mr. Barenberg from the City of Portland, we were able to catch that. Certainly we would have liked to have caught that prior to the House, but sometimes those things happen. And I once again appreciate the efforts of the City of Portland as well as Mr. Barenberg to catch that. So in closing, I wish to thank Chair Rosenbaum, this entire committee, and especially the groups have worked so hard to make House Bill 2420 possible. House Bill 2420 is significant in that it represents a shift in thinking. Many times in the past, employee and employer groups seem to have always found a way to say no rather than finding a way to say yes. And I don't think there's any better illustration than the history that Ms. Squires and myself have had on that. So this truly is something that I have learned, to that when you reach out sometimes, you get a better product. And so with that, Madam Chair, we hope that you would move House Bill 2420 with a due pass recommendation once you insert the dash 5 amendments. And we're excited about this, and I would be happy to take questions now or allow my colleague to provide her testimony.
I think we'll hold questions until we've heard from both of you, but let me just thank you for all the hard work. I would hate to even think, and I bet you would too, about how many hours or years of your personal life might have been devoted to this issue, but you certainly are following on the heels of many other people who've worked to bring this forward today. So thank you for your hard work. And Hasina, please go ahead. Welcome to the Senate Commerce Committee.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Madam Chair, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Hasina Squires. I'm here today on behalf of several organizations, the first of which is my client, Special Districts Association of Oregon, which represents approximately 900 special districts throughout the state of Oregon who provide services such as fire, water, irrigation, parks and rec, libraries, a whole host of general government purpose single service districts. Rural fire protection districts do make up the largest portion of our membership. We have approximately 275 fire districts that are part of our 900 special districts. I'm also here today on behalf of the Oregon Fire District Directors Association, an association that represents the elected officials of rural fire protection district boards. Fire protection district boards typically have approximately 5 elected officials that govern, and I'm here today on behalf of that association. Their executive director, Genoa Ingram, could could not be here today. And I'm also here on behalf of her other client, the Oregon Volunteer Firefighters Association, an association that represents approximately 4,500 EMTs and firefighters across the state of Oregon, some of whom are paid and some of whom are volunteers. For those of you who do not know, Special Districts Association operates a self-insured pool, and we provide, fire districts are the largest type of special district for which we write workers' comp insurance coverage for. We have approximately 165 rural fire protection districts that are part of our insurance pool. Tab 4 of my testimony has a listing of all of the rural fire protection districts that we do write insurance coverage for, broken out by county, so if you're interested to see which fire districts we write comp coverage for that are in your legislative districts, you can take a look. I think it's important to note, and I want to stress this because for those of you who were in the building, all with the exception of Senator Telfer, this issue of MLAC and Management Labor Advisory Committee, where it comes from, I'm sure you've had a briefing from the administrator of the Workers' Comp Division, John Schiltz. It is significant when the Management Labor Advisory Committee, which was a result of the 1990 Workers' Comp reforms, it's a governor-appointed, five-management, five-labor member committee that does review all workers' comp legislation and either gives it the thumbs up or thumbs down. And if it does not pass MLAC and it reaches the governor's desk, the governor will veto that bill. So we are, I'm actually proud to say, the first policy bill out of MLAC that has been approved by MLAC that is not a department bill. So and it's not a state agency bill. We're the first policy bill that's passed out of that committee and made it all the way over to the Senate. And I think we're in the fourth week of session or maybe fifth. My testimony, I want to also highlight the fact that this cancer presumption itself is not a new type of presumption. There is a current presumption in statute that already exists with respect to heart-lung. And in my testimony under tab 2, I have provided the committee with a breakdown of what the current statute says as it relates to a heart-lung presumption, and then also what Senate or House Bill, gosh, that's a Freudian slip, Senate Bill 560, House Bill 2420. Representative Rosenbaum, I am looking forward to a really, really good night's sleep after this bill reaches the governor's desk because this bill haunts me.
Hopefully we won't still
to my very core.
She just was reviewing 2 years ago this legislation.
Yeah, right.
Was
right.
That nightmares or?
Absolute nightmares, without a doubt. So with respect to House Bill 2420, as Mr. Livingston indicated, this bill comes to you as a result of a significant amount of negotiation during the 2008 interim. That was a very contentious legislative session last session, and as Senator Rosenbaum indicated, this type of bill has been before the legislative body for many sessions and just fails to receive enough consensus to move forward. So I'm pleased that we have been able to reach a consensus with our labor partners on this. House Bill 2420 will apply the cancer presumption to 12 different cancers: brain, colon, stomach, testicular, prostate, multiple myeloma, non-Hodgkin's lymphoma, throat, mouth, rectal, breast, and leukemia. Those 12 cancers will be covered under this presumption. The presumption will not apply to volunteer firefighters, and I'll explain a little bit further in my testimony how we applied that standard to not apply to volunteer firefighters. It will apply to cancers first diagnosed on or after July 1 of 2009. The cancer presumption will apply for 7 years following termination of employment. So there's a cutoff date. That was one of the significant things that we were very concerned about last session, about not having any certainty as to when this cancer presumption would end. And it will apply only to prostate cancer if the cancer is first diagnosed before the firefighter's 55th year birthday. Sorry, age 55, prostate cancer goes back into the normal. It's still compensable, but it's not under this cancer presumption. And then it is, I want to be clear with the committee, this cancer presumption is a rebuttable presumption. In the past, for those of you who've been here, we've constantly argued against the Firefighters Union that this is not a rebuttable presumption. It is absolutely a rebuttable presumption. It is rebuttable also in two ways. If the employer can prove that the cancer was not caused or contributed in material part by the firefighter's work as a firefighter. So that's the legal standard that we had that we inserted into this piece of legislation. And also, it is rebuttable if the employer can show that tobacco use was the major contributing cause to the cancer. So there are two ways to rebut the cancer presumption. I want to be clear about who this bill applies to. There are 3,174 paid firefighters in the state of Oregon. Special districts writes workers' comp insurance coverage for approximately 50% of those firefighters. The city of Portland writes comp coverage for 20% of those firefighters. Tualatin Valley Fire and Rescue and Clackamas County Fire District Number 1, which are both special districts, they use private insurance carriers to have their workers' comp coverage, makes up the other 10%, and then the remainder is insured via city-county insurance services. This bill does not apply to volunteer firefighters, and how we go about doing that is defining what a non-volunteer is. And that's a person who receives salary, hourly wages equal to or greater than the minimum wage. That's how we define that. We go on further to state what a volunteer, what types of compensation may be given to a firefighter that sets them apart from paid firefighters. Room, board, lodging, housing, meals, stipends, expense reimbursements, and nominal payments for time and travel. So that's how we've identified what those distinctions are. Finally, with respect to the fiscal impact of House Bill 2420, I'd like to highlight the reasons for our fiscal impact before telling you what the cost or lack of cost will be in the upcoming premium year. Last session, we had many, many concerns about the bill's proposals, different iterations that were advancing through the legislative process. I feel like we've been very consistent in what our objections have been, and I am absolutely certain that Mr. Livingston's group has heard our concerns and responded to them, each of our concerns. Not one. There's not one item that one of us completely lost out on either side of the table. We both gave on both ends of on all sides of the spectrum. So the first issue that was of most concern to us was we needed a clear starting date. The previous versions of this bill may have been retroactive. They were retroactive. We didn't know when it was going to start. How are we going to claim reserve for cancers that we don't know exist? So this bill has a clear starting date. It will apply to cancers that are first diagnosed on July 1, 2009. The burden of proof, this change that from last legislative session, we were discussing whether or not it's rebuttable. Is it rebuttable? Is it not? It is absolutely rebuttable. That standard of evidence that used to be in there, that the cancer was unrelated, has been removed. It has been inserted to the standard of evidence is now whether or not the cancer was caused or contributed to in material part by. Mr. Livingston highlighted the court case that we're using to rely on that at this point. A lot of concern also on our part and quite a bit from the legislature about smoking and its effect and its contribution to cancer, and so we feel that we've adequately addressed that with our provision in there that has a safeguard for tobacco use. A very reasonable tale. If you could only know how far we have come on this tail issue of when this cancer presumption will take effect and when it will also end. A 7-year tail is very reasonable, and I'm very appreciative of Mr. Livingston for giving on that item. And then finally, the earlier cutoff date for prostate cancer that won't apply after age 55. So based upon those provisions that are in House Bill 2420, we do not anticipate a rate increase for paid firefighters' work comp coverage for the upcoming policy year. That's just our bottom line. We are going to continue to monitor the fiscal impact, see what claims we get, but at this point we really feel like we've had a great deal of input and a great deal of certainty inserted into this cancer presumption legislation. So we know when it's going to start. We know who's going to be covered. We don't know what kind of claims we will get, but at this point we won't be raising rates for the upcoming policy year. With that, I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you for your testimony, and also thank you for your well-prepared written testimony. Any questions for these witnesses? Senator Manis Anderson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This bill, of course, you know, caused me great grief last session, or 2007 session, and I really want to commend both of you for being working so hard to make the bill the way it is now. And I also want to thank you. I got the 25-page that went through the research of each, and I didn't print it out, but I did read through that, and I found that extremely compelling also. The other thing, though, I would have loved to have seen the cities by your side, too, as this was it is a mandate to the cities, and I assume we will be hearing testimony. Tell me the process that, were they invited to the table? Had they been at the table in the negotiations on this subject?
Madam Chair, Senator Mona Sanderson, following the conclusion of the 2007 legislative session, Fire Chiefs Association, Special Districts, League of Cities, and there may have been a few other individuals on that letterhead, sent a letter to the State Firefighters Council saying, can we all just get along? Could we sit down and have a discussion? And I think individually, I know that our association had a meeting with the Firefighters Council. I know that the Fire Chiefs Association had a meeting with the Firefighters Council. And we had a great deal of internal discussion within our own association about the magnitude of coverage that we write for workers' comp coverage and who should be at a table if there is a negotiation to take place. And I honestly really didn't think that the firefighters would sit down and have a discussion with us. We've had a lot of fights in the past about collective bargaining and a whole host of things, and I was pleased to see that they would even meet with us individually as an association. It really became clear to us that you can't negotiate or bargain with non-decision makers. And our association empowered our attorney and myself to sit down at the table and make a decision, and whatever decisions were made after I consulted with our underwriting people, the board and the legislative committee would just accept. They wouldn't be run through a big, long process. They wouldn't be run up a chain of command. It was just a decision makers at the table, get your issues out on the table. I'd say that all of the issues that we brought to the table as concerns and considerations were absolutely the same concerns and considerations of the League of Oregon Cities. We all fought the same bill last session. So I feel as though they were represented on the issues. They may not have been sitting at the table across from Kelly Bach, myself, Nelson Hall, George Goodman, Bob Livingston. Those are the people that sat at the table. But their issues were certainly represented. And in addition to that, I feel very confident that I did communicate with their insurance program regularly about what was occurring, how the discussions were proceeding, and where this was all headed.
Thank you for that comment. I do want to point out, members, that we do have a representative of the League of Oregon Cities who signed up to testify, so they will be able to speak for themselves. Also, thank you, Senator Mona Sanderson, for reminding me that, members, you received electronically what is, I think, a 25-page report, which was put into our record electronically. So if you need another copy of that emailed to you, we didn't print it out because we're trying to conserve trees around here as well as resources and money. So, but it is an excellent summary of the research in this area. So are there questions for these witnesses? Senator George.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Both of you know that I'm a pretty big advocate for local governments. And I've read all of as much of the literature as I could, and I still get down to the point that I think that we're making a policy decision here. We're not a scientific board, so we're making a policy decision. Problem is that a big part of that policy decision is being, the cost is being borne by the cities in this situation. I understand special districts are at the table. It seems like to me if we're making a policy decision at the state level, that there ought to be some funds that flow through to the cities to deal with that. Why wasn't there, I mean, we're making policy decisions at the state level, why wasn't there a discussion about compensating the cities for the additional burden that they're going to have, whatever the science is, for our policy decision? Was that a part of the discussions that happened during the negotiations?
Madam Chair, Senator George, a couple of ways to answer that. One, they were always included in the process, you know. It was an open process. Two things to answer your question. There was at least three meetings held at MLAC, and as you know, MLAC represents both local government, self-insured, all the stakeholders in some form or fashion are represented at MLAC. Second question on this issue of whether we should pass monies through to the local government. While I think it's a good question, I think we need to keep in mind that this body, this state, has required that each employer, whether private or public, to provide workers' compensation, no different than providing public employers' retirement system. And so we feel that some of these issues, while it may be the burden on the local employers, are best vetted in the Oregon legislature. And I think Oregon workers' compensation, you have to agree, from the testimony from Representative Matthews, allowing the DCBS and Oregon workers' compensation to manage that program has been hugely successful. And so while I appreciate your question, the fact of the matter is we just feel strongly that this is a matter of state importance, and that's why we have a Oregon legislature.
Follow up? I guess what I'm trying to get at for the two of you is that I have talked to both of you about my position on the bill and appreciate your hard work. I am very uncomfortable about voting for unfunded mandates. I believe if we make decisions at this level, we should fund decisions at this level. And so I guess that's what I want to make sure is on the record is that if this program starts to spiral out of control in costs, there needs to be an awareness by future legislatures that we made a policy decision here, not a scientific decision. I'm not a scientific board. And so we made a policy decision here, and then I think that regardless if we, as they call it, roll the cities on this, that there ought to be an opportunity for local governments to come back at some time and ask for state compensation for a policy decision that we're making at the state level. And I guess I want to just make sure I say that I would strongly be an advocate for, when we make a policy decision, it should not be an unfunded mandate. And I don't know if either of you have comments about that, but I would sure like to see the two of you that after we see how this goes forward, if there's a huge unfunded liability, that it comes back and we make the policy decision to fund it.
Thank you for your comment, Senator George. And I would just say that, you know, in my time here, which I guess has now been a little more than 10 years, I've been called on to vote on lots of changes to the workers' compensation law and have not really had this issue been raised. And that's because I think we do have a model workers' compensation system that has had year after year after year of rate reductions, and it's, I think, seen nationally by employers as a system that other states would like to emulate. So I don't know that specifically responds to your concern today, but we'll have ample opportunity to discuss this before we vote on the bill. If you wanted to respond, please do, and then we do need to move on because we have lots of other people signed up to testify on the bill.
I think you answered it for at least me, Madam Chair.
Okay, well, seeing no other questions, thank you very much for your testimony and for your hard work. And next on our witness list, I'll call Kelly Bach and Ken Armstrong and Tom Chamberlain, if the three of you would like to come up. And welcome to the Senate Commerce and Workforce Development Committee, and I assume you've worked out who will go first.
We just did.
Great.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Kelly Bach. I'm the president of the Oregon State Firefighter Council. We represent nearly 3,000 career firefighters here in Oregon, throughout the whole state, from Ontario to Southern Oregon to Portland, and it's in 45 local unions. I'm going to try to keep my testimony pretty short, since you've heard a lot of the testimony already from Representative Matthews and the other speakers. As you've heard, this is something that we've worked on for many years, including President Chamberlain in the past and other members of the legislature. What we are pleased over the last couple years that we were able to sit down with the stakeholders and the employer groups and work out an agreement that was that worked for both of us. I've bargained labor contracts in the past, and we feel that when both sides sit down and both sides leave feeling they gave a little bit too much, then it's probably a pretty good deal. And that's how we felt, I'll tell you that. And we had a lot of conversations driving back and forth in the cars, myself and our legislative director, Bob Livingston, on, hey, did we give too much? And I heard also that the opposition last time said the same thing. So I feel that that's shows that a pretty good deal was made. In addition to that, we also would like to thank the Oregon Fire Chiefs Association, the Oregon Volunteers, the Fire District Directors, and then along the special districts for sitting down and looking at this problem. But what's really important to me and why we took this up is many years ago, when I was going to run for office, I was seeing more and more of our members getting cancer, including a lot of members from my local. So it was really brought home that more young firefighters were getting cancer. And it wasn't just something that we were reading in the paper or that we heard about abstract. It was actually people that I was working with and members that are in the audience here today. So then we started looking at the struggles that they were dealing with in you know, paying their bills, trying to get benefits, and dealing with this disease that we were pretty certain was job-related. Then we started digging into the studies, looking at other states, seeing what they are doing, and it became even more apparent when there's a stack of studies this big on firefighters in relationship to cancer that our members were, in fact, exposed to more cancers, and there was actually real science. We all had the anecdotal evidence of going home afterwards, showering, my wife still smelling the smoke on me, blowing it out of your nose. We knew that, but then I learned that there was actually real solid science behind it, and it wasn't just funded by the unions. It was seldom, if ever, funded by the unions. It was usually funded by workers' comps, boards, cities, things like that, that were doing these studies. And even with that funding, it was still showing that our members were getting cancer at a higher rate. So that's why one of the reasons I think it's really important. And the other reason, and then I'll conclude my comments, is this is something that the firefighters in the state are really watching. And a lot of times we're down at the Capitol or we're working on policy issues that, frankly, our rank-and-file members, they're doing their job, living their lives, and don't really know what's going on. But I'll tell you, I didn't mention, but I'm a captain for Tualatin Valley Fire and Rescue, and at 7 tonight, I'm going back to the fire station. And I guarantee those firefighters will ask me how this hearing went. They know what's going on. They're watching this bill every day. It's a top priority for my organization and the firefighters in the state. So, with that said, I just hope you guys can come forward and support this bill. We think we put a lot of work into it. We thought we've brought you a good product and taken a lot of the hard work out, and so hopefully you can support that. Thank you.
Thank you for your comments. I think we'll hold questions until we've heard from all of you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Members of the committee, I'm Ken Armstrong. I represent the Oregon Fire Chiefs Association. We, too, are very pleased to be able to be here today. For a number of years, we have been greatly concerned that we haven't been able to find a compromise on this issue. Finally, we're here today to say that there is one. And kudos to everyone who was at the table on this. I don't feel the need to repeat what has already been said or what is going to be coming before you. The only other point I guess I would make is that the fire chiefs always find themselves in something of an unusual situation in that firefighters work for us, yet at the same time we work for city councils and special district boards. Realizing that there had been some concerns by the cities, my members, which are composed about 50% of city chiefs, ultimately decided that we're in the fire service, and it is the right thing to do for the firefighters to support this legislation, and so we couldn't be more pleased to be unanimously supportive of House Bill 2420 and look forward to doing anything we can to see it pass, and we'll answer any questions you may have.
Thank you for your comments, and go Ducks.
Go Ducks.
Please go ahead, Tom.
Good afternoon, Chair Rosenbaum. My name's Tom Chamberlain, excuse me, and I'm the president of the Oregon AFL-CIO, representing 225,000 working families. I'm also a retired Portland firefighter with over 27 years service, and I was one of two firefighter lobbyists who actually got a cancer presumption bill passed through the Oregon Senate in 1991. So firefighters have been working on this for a very, very long time. I'm not going to add any much more to that than we support this bill and respect and commend the parties for coming together. I think pretty much everything's been said.
Yes, Senator Mundus Anderson.
I'd like to ask if this could or has been a bargaining issue. Could this have gone to your... could you have bargained this when you were negotiating contracts?
No, you can't bargain it because it's a workers' comp issue or it's under the Portland Fire and Police Disability and Retirement Fund, and you can't change those benefits through bargaining.
Excuse me.
Chair Rosenbaum, represent Senator Amanda Sanderson.
And Tom, if you could please re-identify yourself.
My name is Tom Chamberlain with the Oregon AFL-CIO.
Thank you.
And I think that's a good question, and I just was remembering that we actually passed a bill last session dealing with the ability to bargain over safety issues, which passed and was signed into law by the governor. But I think Tom's answer is correct, that because this is the state workers' compensation system, it is governed by
statutes and rules, and so. So, other questions for these witnesses? I just wanted to thank you, all of you, for your hard work in bringing a compromise bill, and also time to say that I remember you in 1991. I think I was here as a very, very junior representative to you in those days, and learned a lot from you, and
thank
just
you.
Thank you for all the hard work that you've put in through the years, so. Okay, I think our next witness is Scott Olmos. Is Scott here? Scott, please come forward. And then we also have Scott Winkles. And Scott, if you'd want to come up at the same time, please come forward. We have two Scotts, so why don't you go ahead?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Scott Olmos. I am here to represent myself as a fire captain for the City of Eugene. And I'm here to tell you that I am in support of Senate Bill, or House Bill 2420. This issue hits very close to home. At the age of 32, I was diagnosed with colorectal cancer. At the time of the diagnosis, I have two children, one being a one-year-old and one being a two-year-old, and a wife that was working. As I proceeded through the cancer process, I ended up having surgery, which is a daily reminder to myself because of the 14-inch scar that relies on my abdomen. From there, I went through vigorous chemotherapy treatments for over 6 months, not to become the end, but I went back to the doctor and they discovered another set of cancer in the abdomen. From there, I went back into surgery again, creating another scar on my abdomen. Following that, we chose not to go through with the chemotherapy because there was very little left of my ability and strength in the process. From that point, I chose the path of trying to get better and be successful with my family, not choosing the path of financial doom because I was trying to fight a large city, the City of Eugene. The comments I'm making here are very interesting because the City of Eugene a few years back opposed this bill, and as of today, the City of Eugene took from their neutral stance and is now in a supportive stance. So to answer your question, Senator, there has been some cities that are supporting this bill, and I'm very thankful that I work for a city that does. In that process of me going through the cancer, it was very devastating. I was unable to work during that period of time, and financially, the financial problem grew and grew and grew. Although 10 years later now, I'm out of that financial problem, and life continues to be very good, the daily reminder of my cancer still exists. Each time I go through a colonoscopy, which is every 3 years, that reminder and the wave of emotion and the wave of fear comes over me. The interesting part of the cancer that I have was at age 32, the physicians, the oncologists, and the board that reviewed the cancer that I have was absolutely bewildered that a 32-year-old man, healthy, with no previous cancer in his family or in his extended family, could ever get cancer. They still don't have an answer for it. I think I have an answer for it, and I think it's tied to the job that I do. I think that having an opportunity to have this happen to me gave great light to the rest of our organization, the citizens of Eugene, or the firefighters of Eugene, excuse me, because each and every one of them within about a year went and got a colonoscopy to determine if they had cancer. So the good thing about it for me having it is it did raise awareness for our group. From that point, I would like to say that no matter what the circumstances are, as a firefighter, I will continue to respond to your home. I will come help you in your time of need. And at this point in time, the firefighters of Oregon are in a time of need. If you could please be gracious, please pass this with a due recommendation. I will be much obliged. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony, and thank you very much for your personal story, too. I know it's not always easy to come forward and tell personal stories like that. Are there any questions for Mr. Olmos? Please go ahead.
With your diagnosis, and since, which was what,
1998.
Have there been changes then in safety equipment? Or I know that there's such a change now, I think, from 20 years ago in. You wear those filters, you wear these heavy coats, there's just gloves. I mean, I think there's been a huge change in 20 years, and I'm wondering, are you still coming up with new ways to try to protect yourselves?
Madam Chair and Senator, there has been some changes, although they are not changes that will probably help us in the future. The types of carcinogens that we are exposed to on a daily basis are carcinogens that can be readily absorbed through the skin. Although we do have respiratory protection, the respiratory protection that we have is not always the best of what you can expect. I guess the story that I would share with you on this topic would be is once the firefighters have completed a fire and you return back to the firehouse, we all take showers. And in that time when a person's taking a shower, it's amazing to see the amount of soot that comes off of your skin and the bottom pan of the shower that it's absolutely filthy black. It goes with us in our turnouts. I put those clothes into my car. I take them home and I wash them in my washer and dryer, which is the very same washer and dryer that I use for my children. There has been some advancements. We no longer are able to take our clothes home and wash them. We have to wash them in the firehouse. We also have had some advancements in the types of gear that we wear, although once again, it's still not enough. It still does not suffice the problems that we face and the things that we are exposed to. I don't know if there'll ever be any type of protective bubble that we could wear that would shield us from this type of environment. I realize it is a profession that I chose, and I love it every day. And I think the thing that is probably most interesting about the career path that I have chosen is, as you can see the people behind me here, there's a great deal of support and brotherhood in this profession. During the time when I was going through all of the trying times of the cancer and fighting the cancer, they would come to my home and mow my lawn. Excuse me. It was a difficult time, I'll say that. And I'm thankful for them. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you very much for your testimony, and thanks for being here today. And our final witness who's signed up is Scott Winkle. So, Scott, please go ahead, and please do re-identify yourself for the record.
Certainly. Madam Chair, members of the committee, representing Scott Winkle is representing the League of Oregon Cities. Madam Chair, if you would examine the sign-in sheet, the League of Oregon Cities has not checked that we are opposed to this legislation. My task today is simply to point out the fiscal impacts of the legislation, which I understand is never popular on such a sensitive and emotional issue. Before I do that, I would like to make a couple of comments. This isn't simply a dollars and cents issue for the League. If you look at the way the League and the Association of Warring Counties, through their insurance arm, City County Insurance Services, treats their employees, we have one of the best, if not the best, wellness programs in the state of Oregon. With the exception of a couple of overfunded tech companies, I think our wellness program is rival to none. We've gotten people off smoking. We've paid Weight Watchers. In addition, the League of Oregon Cities and the Association of Oregon Counties, again through CIS, when the unfortunate incident occurred, the tragic incident occurred in Woodburn with the bombing, we paid to make sure that the best trauma counselor available took care of those officers that were emotionally impacted by that event. We are not insensitive, and I would add a personal note that it is difficult for me sometimes. If you ran badge number 33841 through DPSST's computer, you would find my name attached to it in a previous life. So I'm sympathetic to this issue. But it is my task to point out the fiscal impacts of this legislation. And the League of Oregon Cities would anticipate, in its population of firefighters of roughly 1,900, we would anticipate 23 cases per year of the 12 cancers listed on the form. This is how we got to that number. We took the entire population of municipal employees that are served in the Regents Blue Cross Blue Shield pool and counted the number of cases of the 12 cancers over the last 6 years. Those 6 years were 2003 to 2008. We found 454 cases of those cancers. By applying that number to the population, we reached 1.2% total population, and that's how we derived at the number of 23. The total medical, the total medical costs were roughly $6 million for those cases. My understanding is that the rule of thumb in the comp industry is you multiply the comp five times the medical. So this bill will have a fiscal impact on local governments. why the fiscal impact is important in at this time is I think is obvious to everyone. If the legislature imposed no additional costs on local governments, in fact, if the legislature simply went home tomorrow, not that I'm asking you to do so, but if that were the case, it is very unlikely that we would have more municipal firefighters next year, next fiscal year. In fact, I think we will be looking at fewer municipal firefighters next year. That's the that is the fiscal environment that legislative preemptions and voter initiatives have put local governments in. We simply cannot offer the service. We'll not be able to continue. We cannot continue to offer the same service level indefinitely. We have to address local government finance reforms if we are to offer offer coverage like this and maintain a service level. And I think what illustrates the consternation of Oregon's elected officials best is the fact that as soon as I conclude my testimony, I have to go over to Ways and Means and defend the distribution of the 911 revenues. So on one hand, we are looking at a cost increase for cities, and on the other hand, we're looking at a decline in legislatively imposed decline in revenue. So this simply cannot continue and expect if Oregon wishes to have healthy local governments. And with that, I'll conclude my testimony.
Thank you, Scott, for your comments. And I think certainly speak for Senator Telfer and myself, at least, because we were just in a hearing where we were talking about proposals dealing with preemptions that are on local government's ability to raise revenues. So I'm sure everybody on the committee is aware that challenges are facing local government. Are there questions? Yes, Senator George.
Scott, I guess I'd say this to you, and again, I express to you my support for the bill, but I want you to know that in the future, if the league starts to see this particular program, which I view as a policy decision, starting to get significant, I think you ought to bring this back to the legislature for some financial assistance to pay for this, because again, I think this is one of those things that we're making a policy decision to help a group of workers that we all depend on. But at the same time, we're making this decision at the state level that I think obviously is debatable on scientific grounds. We're making a policy decision. So I'd encourage the league to come back in the future and talk to us about what the impact of this is financially, and I would be an advocate for you to find some state resources to pay for what is a state mandate on local governments.
Madam Chair, Senator George, if I may, it is our fervent desire that that does not become necessary, but I do appreciate your generous offer.
Senator Pozanski.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So, Scott, the question was asked earlier as to why the League wasn't an active participant in the work group. Can you share with us as to what decision was made as to why the League chose to sit on the sideline and maybe just get information secondary?
Madam Chair, Senator Pozanski, my recollection of the events was that we had sent a letter, the League had signed on to the letter with the fire chiefs and SDAO, the Central District Associations of Oregon, to join in the work group, and then we were informed. We did offer to sit down, and we were informed that the negotiations had taken place after the fact. I would like to qualify that statement, though, and say that I make no allegation any nefarious. I don't claim any nefarious motive on the part of anyone. I don't think that's what happened. But my recollection of the event. So there was never a decision on our part, I think, to sit out of a negotiation, at least on my part. Does that answer your question, Senator?
Let me, if I can get clarification. So what I think I just heard is that the letter that was sent to say that you're willing, meaning the league was willing to participate, came after the fact, after the negotiations had been completed?
Chair Rosenbaum, Senator Pozanski, no. It was, the original letter was signed by all three associations, the chiefs, SDAO, and the league.
Okay. And I guess the last thing, which is somewhat troubling for me, is that you've acknowledged through your review, meaning the league's review, 23 firefighters will come down with cancer, at least that's what's anticipated. What is the league's position as to how we deal with those individuals who have, in fact, committed themselves to provide this public service? I mean, is this just a risk of the business, or do you not think that cities, just like special districts or others, have some duty to provide for some type of protection or safeguard for those men and women that are willing to be on the front line as a first responder?
Chair Rosenbaum, Senator Prezanski, no, we do have an obligation. We clearly have an obligation. If on the House side, we did in fact circulate an amendment where there were some cancers that we felt there was actually, we felt it may have been a better argument scientifically. For instance, thyroid cancer is not included on the bill. We suggested it ought to be. So yes, I think we do have an obligation to these firefighters. But I would also add that the number 23 is based upon the occurrence of those cancers in the general population of the CIS pool. That does not just firefighters. That was the entire 12,000 employees in the region's pool.
Okay, I apologize for that misstatement. That's fine. Thank you.
Thank you. And also, I just want to clarify that I don't think anyone should assume that local governments or special districts or any entity covered by this bill will not contest claims that are filed. I mean, people will file workers' comp claims presumably for many or some of these cases, but the bill clearly creates the ability to respond to those claims with a rebuttable presumption, which was not in the bill 2 years ago, and also puts some significant sidebars, such as, you know, cutoffs of how many years have passed since somebody's employment. So I think there are lots, and a lot of that language was put in negotiation with some very capable defense lawyers who defend against these workers' comp claims. So I don't think it's reasonable to think that every case of cancer is going to result in a compensable claim.
Madam Chair, if I may, it would be disingenuous on my part to not say that this bill is a remarkable improvement over previous iterations. So I have no qualms putting that on the record.
Thank you. Okay. Well, seeing no further questions for these witnesses, thank you both very much for your testimony. And that does complete our sign-up list. Is there anyone else in the audience that didn't sign up who wishes to testify? Okay, seeing no one, I did agree also to let the proponents have a chance if they needed to respond to anything, but I'm seeing their heads shaking, so I think they feel like their record is complete. And we did talk about the testimony that was introduced electronically, so I think we've taken care of that. So I will close the public hearing on House Bill 2420, and I'll open a work session on House Bill 2420.
Madam Chair.
Yes, Senator Prezanski.
I move the -5 be amended into House Bill 2420.
Senator Prezanski has moved the -5 amendment to House Bill 2420. Is there discussion on the amendment? I do have a statement that the City of Portland asked me to read into the record about this amendment, and I think you should all have the amendment in front of you. It's pretty simple. It just inserts some language on line 12 on page 3 of the bill, clarifying that that language just refers to subsection 5. So the bill and the -5 amendments require the City of Portland to apply subsection 5 to its fire, police, and disability retirement system, but are not meant to apply to any other provision of Chapter 656 to the City of Portland Fire, Police, Disability, and Retirement Fund. And that statement was provided to me in advance of the hearing by David Barenberg, representing the City of Portland, who also expressed the city's support for the bill with this amendment. So I'll make that part of the record. Any further discussion on the amendment? Is there objection to the amendment? Seeing none, the amendment is adopted. And Senator Prezanski.
Madam Chair, I move House Bill 2420 to the floor as amended by the -5 amendments with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Prezanski has moved House Bill 2420 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there discussion? Yes, Senator Manus Anderson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think what is compelling that the burden of proof should really lie with the employer than the employee. I don't know what it was of the testimony the proponents who came to talk to me about this, but the cities and the special districts, that they do hire these firefighters, and they are, I think, responsible for the safety and the environment of these firefighters, and therefore they need to be providing safety equipment, providing an environment that will make it as safe as possible. From the testimony, it was obvious that you can't prevent, especially if it's absorbed through the skin. But that is why I am definitely in favor of this bill, because I truly believe they are working for the people, and therefore the burden of proof and the problems should be with the employer and not with the employee. And that is why I am in favor of this bill.
Further discussion? Okay, and I just want to once again thank the people who worked really, really hard. And that's not just the people in this room. Obviously, there are a lot of firefighters who have worked on this issue for clearly a decade or more. I also want to thank firefighters who are in the room who obviously could have used the protection of this bill but are here to show their support. So I think it actually is a great bill, a carefully crafted bill, and I'm very happy to be able to support it as well. So, seeing no further discussion, Pam, will you please call the roll?
Senator George.
Aye.
Senator Brzezinski.
Aye.
Senator Moncus
Anderson. Aye.
Vice Chair Topper.
Aye.
Chair
Brzezinski. Aye. Motion carries, and the chair will carry the bill on the floor. And members, with nothing further to come before us today, we're adjourned. Thank you.